So to those folks listening today on this podcast, we'd like to welcome Dr. J. Cherie Allen to join me. And Dr. Allen, I was thinking about how to get this going, and I love the concept of a millennial conversation with a boomer. And so that requires a little explanation. So a little a shameless plug for you, J. Cherie. Dr. Allen has her own podcast. And so take a minute and describe what that's all about, J. Cherie.
Well, first of all, Dr. Homan, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. This is a pleasure to join you. So millennial health, you know, I think we get a bad rap sometimes as millennials. So we're kind of the group from 1980, 1981 to like the mid 1990s. So we're between 25 and 40 years old at this time. And, you know, I'm a family medicine physician. I work here at Center Care in Long Prairie. And one of the things I've recognized in my clinical practice is that I don't see a lot of millennials coming in for their physical exams or, you know, to at least figure out what the baseline is in terms of their body. You'll see for, you know, complex issues, maybe headaches or employment physicals are one thing, or now I'm seeing a lot of, oh, thyroid issues or mental health issues. And I take that opportunity to go a little step further to address more than just their chief complaint and bring in some of the preventive health issues as well. And why I'm so particularly drawn to this generation, besides being one of them, we are not yet at the point where we are saddled by the burden of chronic disease. And we still have a golden opportunity to make a difference in our long-term health outcomes if we make some changes, if we get on the right path with our primary care physicians or clinicians that we see, but we're not coming in for those visits. So that's the point of my podcast, the things I wish I could say to all the millennials out there to help set them up for better health in their future.
And so for our listeners and viewers today, check it out. Dr. J. Cherie Allen has her own podcast. I've listened to them. And I must confess that my daughters are older than you, J. Cherie. So I apologize if I look dated and elderly, but I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Oh, we'll have fun.
Yes. And so I want to go somewhere to me that is fascinating, as you talked about rural populations mm-hmm. and this mm-hmm. notion of taking control of our health. And that is that in many respects, healthcare is a unique opportunity for us to be servants and stewards of our community. Mm-hmm. In other words, one of our primary goals, and you learn this in medical school and nursing school, is taking care of our fellow human beings. So we're not a manufacturing company. You know, we are about people serving people. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to have you have a conversation. I was listening to your conversation most recently. I think you recorded in August when you were talking about pregnancy. And how your pregnancy journey amongst COVID, holy cow, you talk about mm-hmm. a thing that is remarkable. So talk about your sense of being pregnant, mm-hmm. somebody growing inside you. I have three mm-hmm. grandkids. I'll be an honorary grandparent if you want me to be. But this notion of being a physician, mm-hmm. public health, mm-hmm. being our brothers and sisters keepers, mm-hmm. But also scared. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Dr. Allen, talk about all the emotions that you were feeling during your pregnancy and COVID and mm-hmm. being a doctor and all this.
Yeah. So I am, at the time of this recording, 9 months pregnant. So yep. any day now. And so that means I've been pregnant for the majority of this pandemic and working full time. And in being in a rural practice, I see patients in the clinic. I also work in the inpatient setting where I admit patients who are quite ill. It has been quite emotional, as you mentioned, very scary at times, and being honest, very disheartening at times too. You know, I'll go back to the very beginning and talk about my decision to get the vaccine while I was pregnant, because that was a very hard decision for me. I went back and forth in my mind so many times. I canceled my appointment, rescheduled my appointment. And I want to be true to those emotions so that women who are struggling to make those decisions understand that they're not alone in feeling that way. Right. There's nothing wrong with contemplating, over contemplating, or over asking questions. But I ultimately decided to get the vaccine because if my baby is to be well, I first had to be well. And that is what sealed the deal for me. Unfortunately, this child wouldn't survive if I didn't survive. You know, and I understand that everyone's risk and their level of exposure is quite different. You know, I'm working in healthcare, so I'm seeing patients on a daily basis who are COVID positive. Sometimes they come in and they're not coming in for COVID symptoms. But after you start digging a little deeper in the history and you start putting it together, you're like, oh, we should add that to the differential and we should certainly test for COVID. And it's quite a scary feeling when it comes back positive after the fact and you were in the room without appropriate PPE. So that helped to seal the deal for me. But I did want to stress that it's okay to go back and forth, to have these mixed emotions, to wonder if it's safe. At this point, we now know that it is. The overwhelming majority of the governing bodies in obstetrics and gynecology are recommending that pregnant women get vaccinated from COVID. You know, we are immunocompromised at baseline while being pregnant. Our outcomes are worse, right? So very important to do that. And I think going forward, after I made that decision, of course, I was nervous about the baby, but the baby is fine. The baby is fine. And at this point, studies have been released with women who've gotten the vaccine before I did, who have delivered and have had healthy pregnancies. And I know a lot of people still reference that in the studies, in the original studies, there were some women who were pregnant when they received the first dose of the Moderna vaccine, but they were pulled from the study once their pregnancy was discovered. At this point, you have a lot of people like me who have gotten both doses and have carried their pregnancies to term successfully. So please take heart in that the data has come a long way since December of 2020.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jayshree. And I want to maybe dive into that a little bit, because you talked about, on the one hand, emotion as a mother, right? And being accountable for this precious thing growing inside you. Yes. On the other hand, you're a physician, and so you read studies all the time. And if you hear a major concern by people of childbearing age is the unknownness, right, of a vaccine that is certainly trying to counteract the worst pandemic that hopefully any of us will ever live through. Talk about that emotional journey that you just described as as a expectant mother and concern for that thing inside you, that that human being, but also then reading the scientificness of it. Many of us, human beings, lead with emotion. That's what makes us human, right? That's the cool part. Otherwise, we'd just be whatever, automatons. So talk about how you manage that emotional journey of, is this safe for me? Is it safe for my baby? Versus, as you mentioned, the ACOG guidelines and all the other scientific. How did you manage that conversation in your head?
Yes. So I actually spoke to quite a few people. And that's the first thing I'd recommend with this emotional roller coaster that you'll go through in your mind. Start having conversations with other pregnant women, friends who are in primary care or in obstetric fields. Start asking questions. No question is too stupid. No question is dumb. No question is annoying. Ask the questions. I think I annoyed the life out of, I have a friend in REI, and I was going to her every single day with a follow-up question. I spoke to my pharmacist in Long Prairie and asked questions as well. That's the first thing. Take these conversations out of your head and start talking to people. After you listen to podcasts like this, you read, you know, different newsletters that promote the same sort of information. It's okay to let your concerns, your questions be known and to get good answers that make sense to you, right? And answers that you understand. Don't let anyone kind of talk over your head or tell you like, oh, it's fine, and leave it at that. If you are not satisfied with what you've heard, keep asking, keep digging, because the answers are out there, right? So I was in a unique position, as you mentioned, with the emotional aspect, but also I am a physician. And so I understand the science, I understand the data. And I received the Pfizer vaccine. So I got vaccinated back in December and January of 2021 for my second shot. And so I understand the mRNA technology. I also understand that it was not a novel technology. This was already in the works. I also understood that there was no portion of this vaccine or in this process that is known to cause harm to pregnant women, which is very different from live vaccines, right? You think of there's some vaccines that you can't get while you are pregnant. A lot of pregnant women might resonate with like rubella, right? We always test for your titers when you're pregnant, but if you're found to not be immune, we don't give you that vaccine while you are pregnant. We wait until after the pregnancy. So there was no component of this mRNA vaccine that was known to impact pregnancy. And I think I also took comfort in understanding why this process moved so quickly. And I think that's a big hiccup that a lot of people have when it comes to emotions. The vaccine was made too fast. It was too fast. Yes, it was one of the faster ones, but it was not brand new, right? So that's one. The technology was already in the works for other viruses. Number two, this is something that impacted the entire world. It wasn't one population, one demographic, one country. The entire world had to shut down because of this virus. So we had to pour a lot of resources, more than we would for something that only impacts a smaller segment of the population, because we were on a mission to try to get the world going again. And honestly, pouring all of those resources into this production process makes a huge difference, as with anything in life that we try to accomplish, right? If you're building a house, if you could put more money into the house, you get the house faster than if you have to, right, spend time saving and, you know, waiting on this step, that step. And then a lot of steps happened simultaneously. That's another big thing. A lot of people are concerned that steps were skipped. That is not true at all in this process. Steps were not skipped in this vaccine production process, but a lot of things did happen at the same time, which was a huge financial risk, right, to all of us, because if step A didn't work out while we were already proceeding with step B and step C, that would have been a huge risk to us. But we invested the very best of resources that we had to make this vaccine possible. And that's why we had it available so quickly.
Boy, those are great comments. And your point about talking to people indicates how, as we try to find the truth, that we have to listen carefully and also listen to the right people, trusted voices.
Yes. And the source is important. Yeah. The source. Yeah. Because that's become a big issue now with misinformation and false information being spread. So, you know, I'm a part of, like most people or most millennials, I don't know, we're on a couple group chats. And, you know, even if you're not on group chats, you're on Facebook or some social media sites, and you'll see people post some things that are quite questionable. One of the things I started doing is just responding and saying, what's the source? Where did you get this information? And honestly, 99% of the time, people can't tell you where they got that information, and because it's not a credible source.
Yeah, that's a great point about who we use as a trusted and listen as a trusted voice.
Yes.
So I want to go. So we know, here's what we know about you. You're a millennial. Yeah. You're fascinating to talk to. You're going to have a baby girl any day.
Yes.
But who else is Jay Shree? Tell me a little bit about you and where you grew up. And because starting out with my comment about people serving people, the value that each of our folks bring to our organization is the peopleness. It's their humaneness. Mm-hmm. So who are you? Tell me a little bit more about you. What's your story?
Jay Shree. daughter of Patrick Allen and Jennifer McCook. So I was actually born in Jamaica. So I was born in the Caribbean, raised there. And I moved to New York City with my mom when I was 10 going on 11. So I have the story of immigrants in pursuit of better educational opportunities, a better life. And, you know, I thank my mom for all the sacrifices that she made, the dreams that she gave up to pursue dreams for me, right? So that's how we ended up in New York City. But the majority of my family is still living in Jamaica at this time. Then I continued my education there through undergrad. I started at NYU, but it was a little too pricey for my family. So after the first year, I transferred to the public school system in New York called CUNY, the City University of New York. And so I got my undergraduate degree in psychology there and went to medical school in Nashville, Tennessee. And I think that's probably where the J. Sheree I am today, I think that's where she got her start. So I went to Meharry Medical College, which is a historically Black medical college in Nashville, Tennessee. And I think that's when I really started to put together the pieces of who I wanted to be as a clinician going forward. You know, we worked in underserved populations among very vulnerable patients. And it made me realize something that I think was key and how I ended up in Long Prairie kind of started here, is recognizing that a lot of the issues our patients were battling daily weren't necessarily due to a lack of health in its standard form that we always think of, but more so the socioeconomic factors that also impact your health. That's what I started to see. Do you have secure housing? Do you have a job, right? What are your responsibilities for your family? Outside of what I know, can you afford the medications that we're prescribing? I didn't realize how impactful those things were until I got to medical school. And so that is what kind of opened my eyes to, you know, this is about a little more than just the science, which brought me to who I am today. I then completed my residency training at the Mayo Clinic, and that's how I made it to Minnesota. And Mayo opened the world for me because I now started to understand the different parts of medicine. There's a huge academic center, but there's also a rural component. Most people don't think of Mayo and think rural, but the family medicine training program is actually not in Rochester. It's in Cassin, Minnesota. And so I had a very similar experience in my residency that I'm having in Long Prairie right now. And that drove me to really get to know the population I wanted to serve on a deeper level. You know, I think it's no secret that I like doing things like this. I love podcasts. I love media. I love administration. I love that sort of stuff. But I think you are better at that if you have clinical context to apply to it. And so that's what drove me to Long Prairie and to merging the worlds that I have today, which leads me here to sitting and talking with you.
I got to tell you, I love that part of your story. So you got me thinking about something that is a passion for me. As you know, I'm from a small town in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to tie together a couple of things that are evident to you and I, but to the listener might be a little opaque. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this notion of what we would call population health, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, there are parts of all populations, and certainly in America, which is unfortunate, where health outcomes are not what we would think. Mm-hmm. Certainly in diverse folks. Holy cow, the pandemic has shown that in spades. Rural America mm-hmm. does not have the health outcomes. Many of our counties that CentraCare serves are below the federal poverty level. Mm-hmm. Socioeconomic standards. As you know, in Long Prairie, you deal with a large Amish population. Mm-hmm. And so as you, as a leader and as a physician, and this is not a COVID question. How do we start to address those inequities, whether it's diverse, socioeconomic? How do we all kind of rally around this thing? How do we make my brothers and sisters' health better? Because health does mean everything. How do you look at that?
It does. Health is absolutely everything. I always say your health is your wealth. You know, if your health wasn't anything, Steve Jobs would still be here. So I was like, if he's not here, that tells you how important your health is, right? You can't buy that. I think the answer to your question from my very limited experience as a clinician thus far is we have to get granular. And we need to talk to the population that we are serving and understand what their needs are. I think throughout our process of, you know, being in medical school and being in residency and, you know, QI projects and research that comes out, we formulate our own conclusions on what we think people in diverse populations require, or what they want, what they need, or what we think that they need based on the metrics we're reviewing. And then we apply those to their communities, where I think it would perhaps be a little more effective to, I want to say focus group, but just to give an example of what I mean, actually have a focus group with people, representatives from the communities that we are trying to serve, and getting a sense of what their needs and what their issues are. And I think we have to be very careful to recognize that, you know, someone who speaks Spanish. So I'm in Long Prairie, for instance. You mentioned we have a large Amish population. We also have a large Latinx population. But the needs of the Mexicans is very different from the needs of the Dominicans, very different from the needs of the Puerto Ricans, very different from the needs of the Colombians, right? So we can't say, oh, we're launching this program or implementing this strategy to help our Latinx patients, and that's it, because it doesn't work that way, because they're so different in their own cultures. So our suggestions, our solutions, our you know, interventions don't necessarily penetrate any group well enough, because it doesn't meet the needs of those actual groups. So I think to answer your question, we have to speak with the people we are trying to care for and ask, what are their particular needs? What can your healthcare professionals do to help you? And I think that's where we start.
Boy, I love that. It reinforces that notion that we started with, is people serving people, but also the sense of community. The answers to address the needs of our very diverse populations are solutions that we may not own as doctors or a health system. It involves conversation and collaboration with all sorts of folks. Yeah. And that primarily includes the people that we are serving. So I think your observations are just really critical. And this requires time and energy and effort and outreach and listening. So thank you for all of your listening. Holy cow. So for those of you that listened, thank you. I know we all wish Dr. Allen continued whatever on having a baby. It's just, I remember when our daughters were born and our grandkids. So it's a special thing. I'm looking forward to your next podcast, actually, after having the young lady. And please continue to be an active voice in our community for all things that are important for our patients and our communities. And it has been just a thrill. So thank you very much. Again, thank you, Dr. J. Cherie Allen from Long Prairie. Check out her blog and podcast. It's way cool. And it's been fun to talk to a millennial. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.